KPCW News Time is 8:06. Well, as I mentioned before, the snow gods seem to have given us a great Valentine's Day gift. We're still under a winter weather warning. Let's hear from Cedric Haynes at ABC4 about what to expect today.
Good morning. Yeah, I'll tell you what, talk about a change to winter. We have flipped the switch and the snow is coming down, and we've got more off and on snow expected as we go throughout today. At least in Park City, we're going to be seeing the potential of some heavy snow continuing as those highs stay in the 30s out there, gusty winds and that snow off and on. It won't be completely consistent today like what we saw yesterday afternoon and evening, but we'll have rounds of snow throughout the day. In the Heber Valley, we'll have snow throughout this morning, and we'll see that mixing with a little rain as we go into the afternoon. But overall, a rain-snow mix expected for today with highs climbing to around 40 degrees. Now, as we go into tonight, those temperatures drop again, and that means, yes, more snow will continue as we get that northwest flow kicking in. So that will create those snow showers throughout the nighttime hours tonight into Saturday morning, leading to more snow accumulations as we go throughout your Friday night into Saturday morning. So all said, all together, as we go throughout between now and to your Saturday morning, should still wind up with about 1 to 3 feet in the mountains for snow totals. And then we're looking at, again, in the Heber Valley, snow totals ranging anywhere from about 6 to 12 inches of snow expected. So again, a very decent system moving through, probably the most significant one we've seen so far this season. Now, as we go into your Sunday, we're going to have another chance of snow moving in as a new system approaches. So we're not going to see much of a break before that next system approaches as we get into your Sunday. Before that system arrives, we're looking at temperatures Sunday morning starting off into the single digits and the teens again across portions of the area. So keep that in mind. Another frigid start. Then as we go throughout the day, those temperatures climb into the 30s to near 40 in the Heber Valley. And then we see that snow moving in by the second half of your Sunday. That'll continue Sunday night into your Monday. So President's Day, it's looking like we're going to be having periods of snow around and temperatures in the 30s to near 40 degrees. There will likely be snow accumulations with this system. Right now, on the order of 4 to 8 inches on average for most of the Heber Valley and up to Park City. But especially areas near Park City could see a little bit more with that system as it moves through. That system will start to taper off as we go into your Tuesday, and we see temperatures still staying on the chilly side. And that sets the stage for, yes, you guessed it, another winter system as we get towards the end of next week, sometime around next Thursday into Friday. And that one looks like that will bring snow to Park City and the Heber Valley, and that will likely lead to more snow accumulations as well. Now, what's interesting is temperatures are not going to be too cold, but they're definitely not going to be too warm either. They're going to be, as the story goes, just right. We're looking at those temperatures in the mornings next week in the teens and 20s with highs in the 30s to around 40 degrees as you get closer to the Heber Valley. So active weather pattern will be in place. So if you wanted the snow, you mentioned the snow gods brought us a gift for today. Looks like that's going to continue right on into next week. So I don't know if it'll be a gift by the end of the week, but we'll see.
Well, I think for most of us up here, Cedric, it is a gift, and we are we really like it when you give us a forecast like that. Thanks for spending time with us.
No problem. Thank you.
Have a good weekend.
You too. Thank you.
So all this new snow is undoubtedly going to create some new challenges in the backcountry. On the phone to talk about it is Greg from the Utah Avalanche Center.
Yeah, good morning. All this new snow certainly is creating challenges. You know, if you go to the Utah Avalanche Center website, you will see that every single forecast zone statewide has a high avalanche danger rating today. So high danger statewide. The Salt Lake Mountains, the Park City Mountains have been a little slow to play catch up with this storm. We're seeing 12 to 15 inches or so over the last 24 hours. The Uinta Mountains have had a lot of snow. They have a high avalanche danger rating today. The Provo Mountains have gotten over 3 inches of water, and the Ogden area mountains have gotten nearly 4 inches of water. So over the past 24 hours. So this is a huge load of snow. We've had some wind-blown snow as well. So dangerous avalanche conditions. And I'm expecting in the Salt Lake Mountains and the Park City Mountains that we're going to, you just heard the weather forecast. So we're going to see snow increasing today. The Cottonwood Canyons will do especially well beginning tonight, I think. So the Cottonwoods have been a little slow to the party, but they're going to catch up tonight. And we're expecting a high avalanche danger pretty much through the weekend. So to reflect this high danger, we have issued an avalanche warning again statewide. Pretty much every mountainous zone of the state has a high avalanche danger. So definitely time to step back If people don't have the skills to enter the backcountry to assess avalanche terrain, you want to avoid being in avalanche terrain right now. We're just advising people to stay out of the backcountry for this moment. We've had a lot of accidents this winter. We've had 4 fatalities. We've had a lot of close calls. There was a close call yesterday in Big Cottonwood Canyon with 2 people involved in an avalanche. It was over 2.5 feet deep, 2 partial burials. And we've had so many stories like this winter. So, just definitely time to take a step back and play it safe. You know, and we have active weather for the next week or so. People just gonna have to be patient and follow the weather forecast and follow the Utah Avalanche Center avalanche forecast where you may be traveling.
Okay, thanks, Greg.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Well, notwithstanding the snow, it seems as though the plows are doing a pretty decent job out there. Taking a look at traffic, there are the usual backups on 224 and 248, but they don't seem any worse than usual. So things are moving here in Old Town. We see the plow came by just a few minutes ago. But take your time. Leave some extra time. I think there is enough snow that you may still want to be traveling carefully. So you're listening to the Local News Hour. Coming up, we're going to have an update on what's going on in the South Summit School District with Superintendent Greg Maughan. Then, because it's Valentine's Day, we're talking heart health with cardiologist Dr. Armand Lapine. We'll finish our hour by speaking with Brandon Francis about this weekend's ski-joring event in Heber City. Stay tuned. Well, on the phone to give us an update on what's going on in the South Summit Schools is Superintendent Greg Maughan. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. How are you?
Excellent. So, the schools in the area have all remained open, but I'm sure one question I have is, on a morning like this, when you wake up at whatever time in the morning, how do you go about the process of evaluating whether to leave the schools open?
Well, so today, our Camas Valley schools, actually, students aren't in today. It was already a regularly scheduled professional learning day. Today was a comp day. Administrators are working, but Our schools over in Silver Creek, they actually were scheduled today. And so usually when it snows, I'm up about 4:30 or so and heading over that way, just driving over that way to get a read of what the conditions are like before making that determination. I talked to our facilities people and they're in contact with the building custodians and just we just try to triangulate and make sure everything's going to work out and make the best decision possible, whether we look at a delayed start, just a regular start, or a potential snow day or remote day.
And by the way, excellent planning on the part of the South Summit Schools to skillfully schedule a day without classes in advance. I don't know how you knew it was coming. But Greg, how often in the past, during your tenure as a superintendent, how often have you actually had to either delay or close the school?
It's pretty rare. The really heavy winter we had a few years ago, we had to do it once or twice, I think. But our crews are just they are absolute workhorses, and they get there so early, and they just clear snow, they bust up ice, and they salt and that. Because really, we all have the same goal. We want kids in buildings, in school. In classrooms and so it's just it's rare, but the reason it's as rare as it is because we have such a great dedicated staff working their tails off to make it happen.
And is the critical issue sort of bus access and bus safety? Is that sort of what ultimately drives the decision?
That is one of the main factors in that, yes. Transportation is, driving this morning as I was driving to the Capitol, it was a terrible drive, as far as visibility and just snowpack and everything else. And it's one thing, I'm in a little four-wheel drive truck and I'm doing okay, but I can't even imagine driving a school bus full of students in conditions like that. And so it is one of the main critical factors that we consider when we look at potentially delaying a start or doing a snow day or a remote day.
Okay, so you mentioned that you were driving to the Capitol. That sort of naturally sets me up to ask you, what's the legislature up to? What are you following, and what are you working on today?
Well, there's the visible stuff, and then there's the invisible stuff that you don't know about. No, today, this morning, so every Friday we have a rural caucus meeting. It starts at 7, and so this morning, you know, a lot of the conversation at the rural caucus, it obviously deals with rural Utah issues, and we had a really nice report. Southern Utah University did a great report on their impact. They talked about their student body and how many enrolled students are coming from rural Utah and the impact that that has on rural communities. And, we also heard some reporting on some of the wild horse things that are going on, and just it can be a smorgasbord of issues that are related to rural Utah. So that's what this morning was, and then the rest of the day I've got I'll be with our joint legislative committee just looking at bills and discussing those bills and determining, you know, level of support or opposition or maybe just a hold and wait. So, you know, the legislature's busy. They have a lot of bills out. And I think there's a lot of bills that are still to come. And, you know, obviously, as with anything, there are some that you like and there are some that you don't.
Kate, can you highlight any of the bills that you're particularly following, either because you hope they pass or because you hope they don't?
Well, so there's a few in fact, our business administrator, Adam Robinson, reported out on some last night in our board meeting. There's some that adjust some of the property tax, the way the money, the property tax is used. So the money would be sent to the state, and we would get the same number of dollars back. But some of our concern with that is it's taking local money that's supposed to stay local, sending it to the state, and that money, sure, it may come back dollar for dollar, but it may be more of a flexible allocation. So those are usually some of the first things to look at going when you have lean years. Mm-hmm. And so it's we worry about that. There's another one out there, Senate Bill 102, that addresses sunsetting certain programs, which is a little concerning, because generally I know as a parent, when I would enroll my student into a particular program, I appreciated the confidence I could have in the school system that program would be around to see my child or my student through. And so some of those are, you know, we worry a little bit about those. It's not that they will go away, but there are sunset dates, and certainly the legislature should and would, I imagine, review those and determine if they want to renew those. But it does, there is a part of that bill that does remove some of the professional weighted pupil unit money that districts use to help in part of some of the payment for usually steps and lanes of salaries of educators. So we've been trying to talk to our legislators about that one. And I mean, there are quite a few, and there are some that obviously there are those that we support as well. The thing about the legislative session is there are going to be bills about anything you can think of and then some.
Okay. I want to hear more about last night's board meeting. Among the things I know you talked about was the baseball/parking lot project. What's that about?
So we've been, a couple years ago, we built a new softball field, and we've been working on a baseball field. And so so we talked, made some requests to the board to approve funding for putting asphalt in the parking lot, not just leaving it dirt or rock, some landscaping and lighting, things like that, just in an effort to get that project buttoned up and finished so that it it's not looming or lingering.
Is that something that's going to get done this summer?
We're hoping so. Mm-hmm. We're certainly hoping so. It would be really nice to have that done this summer. And, you know, it is interesting. We have such long winters compared to, you know, what they experience out on the Wasatch Front, that we really have to capitalize as much as we can on those summer months to get projects done.
Okay. Another item I saw on the agenda was that you were going to hear a report from the computer people about the need for an IT refresh. Can you explain what that's about?
Yeah. So we've been on a rotation with Apple products. The program we've been participating with Apple. We're just finishing year three, and they have another program that we wanted to look at that would provide. It actually provides more service to our district and our students, and actually will save us a little bit of money in doing so. And so that's one of those that seems like it's just a no-brainer. And so we were looking at our current devices that we have are actually on a four-year rotation. If we pay a portion of that each year. And so what this would do, this would put us on the new plan, and we wouldn't have the fourth year. It would actually start a new four-year cycle with Apple with this new program. And a lot of the savings – oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. A lot of the savings.
A lot of the savings, you know, they reported last night the cost of screens to be repaired and replaced, you know, tens of thousands of dollars a year. And that's one of the neat things about this new program is that each device is allowed, not that we want this, but if a screen breaks, you know, the first time or two, it's actually there's no cost. It's part of the program.
And I would imagine that would be a significant savings. I suspect that middle schoolers in particular can be pretty hard on screens.
But, you know, it's funny. They actually are not the worst. But so our elementary and middle school, they generally have iPads.
Okay.
And the iPads actually hold up really well. The high school students have laptops. And that's where we actually see most of our repairs having to come in. Whether it's the bezel or the hinges between the main body and the screen or screens getting cracked. So they also showed the board a new carrying case where the laptop actually is held in. You don't actually take it out of the padded case. It stays on it. So we're hoping that will also help.
Okay, Greg, any other highlights from the board meeting last night?
I think, well, you know, we talked about some student data. The board had asked us to present some data. That was great. I think my favorite part is always getting to highlight students, and we got to highlight several students last night. One of our student board members, Emily, she was recently in the Live Like Sam. She was spotlighted in the Live Like Sam program. She's just a rock star and involved with everything. And she's graduating with her associate's degree and a bunch more elective credits. We got to recognize Emma Broadbent. This season, she set three new school records for scoring, rebounds, and blocked shots. And then what's really cool is she actually beat the state record. It was 29 years held. She beat the state record for all-time rebounds in girls basketball, and her season's still going. So that's fantastic. And then we got to honor our academic All-State mm-hmm. students as well.
All right, Greg, thanks for spending time with us. Anything else you want to touch on before we go?
No, I don't think so, unless you've got more questions. Right. I'm good.
Good luck with the legislature, and drive carefully when you come back up the mountain. Bye, Greg.
Thank you. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
The Park City Council has expressed support for some elements of the Main Street Area Plan, which is a blueprint for the future of Old Town. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports.
At its policy retreat Thursday, the Park City Council discussed various aspects of the plan, which proposes several major redevelopment concepts that would transform the historic core ahead of the 2034 Winter Olympics. The council's conversation was guided by consultants working on the plan, which was informed by a committee last year. Their hope was to end the day Thursday with a clear vision for the council's priorities. The council did support pursuing an ambient temperature loop study, which would analyze the potential for more sustainable energy uses to heat buildings and possibly melt snow on Main Street sidewalks. There was also interest in exploring a redesign of Main Street to make it more pedestrian-friendly, although council members remain unclear on what exactly that would look like. A more controversial element of the plan involves building a gondola between the Brewpub lot at the top of Main Street and Deer Valley Snow Park base. The project is seen as an opportunity to increase economic activity, as city data shows that most Main Street customers come from Deer Valley. However, some council members aren't sold on the idea. In 2020, the city studied a gondola alignment that would have traveled down Deer Valley Drive to Snow Park, but that project was abandoned due to several complications. Before moving the idea forward, city leaders said they need more information about past gondola feasibility studies, including alternative locations. The city would also need to start a conversation with Deer Valley to engage its interest. Another contentious part of the proposal is redeveloping a significant portion of Sweet Alley with hotels and commercial space. Councilmember Ryan Dickey said it's a crucial part of the plan, as revenue from new development could help fund the other upgrades, like the Main Street redesign.
When I see a project that has no revenue source, I see that it will never happen.
But Councilmember Jeremy Rebell expressed concerns about the council biting off more than they could chew. He said the city should focus solely on the redevelopment of the China Bridge garage, half of which needs to be replaced in the next decade due to structural deficiencies.
I'm proposing that we focus on what we could actually achieve.
A majority of the council was supportive of focusing on the China Bridge property to start. Consultants working on the Main Street area plan will return to the council at a future meeting to discuss the decision-making process going forward. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Ski jarring is galloping into Heber this weekend. Here with some detail, we have Brandon Francis. Good morning, Brandon.
How are you?
I am doing well, sir. So for those in the audience who don't know what ski jarring is, can you explain a little bit about what's going on here?
Well, we like to refer to it as a rodeo on skis, but we just like to combine the two worlds of Utah, the greatest snow on earth, and our Western heritages of riding horses. So we just we take the horses and we pull the skiers and go as fast as we can, pull them through obstacle course and have fun.
Can you explain a little bit about the obstacles? Obviously, I think people can get a visual picture of someone almost looking like a water skier, right? Being with a rope behind a horse galloping through the snow. What kind of obstacles do they face?
Yeah, it's a lot like water skiing. It's a lot of fun. But we put it up kind of like a slalom course, though, kind of like skiing through Park City or Deer Valley or anywhere else. We put up slalom courses to go through there. And then our pro divisions and our top divisions that we have with, skiers who have been through Ski Utah or come from the University of Utah ski team and stuff, we add a few jumps and different things. And this year we've added a freestyle big air event. So it'll be great to see how much air these guys can get coming off our big jump, throwing backflips and twists and everything else.
So they have to throw a backflip and a twist while still holding on to that cable, I take it, right?
No, they'll let go when they get in the air.
All right. I was going to say, because that would be an interesting trick.
We don't want to cause anyone to go to the hospital and throw them down to the ground too fast.
Have you guys done this, the freestyle event before, or is that new?
It's a little new this year. We've tried it out in downtown Salt Lake the last couple of years, and everyone's liked it more than our what we called Big Air, mm-hmm. which was more of a distance contest. And so we decided, well, let's see what it does this year up here in Heber.
Okay, so let's remind everybody, where will the event be tomorrow? Or it starts today, doesn't it?
It does. It starts today at 2, and then we start tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., but it's at the Wasatch County Events Complex. It's at the outdoor rodeo arena. So we kind of clean everything out and we go from one end to the other.
And will all this new snow present a challenge, or is it gonna, how do you sort of prep the course given the new snow?
Well, we have a snow cat, so we go through and groom it and push it out just like you do at the ski resort, pack mm-hmm. it all down and get ready for it. So it's been a little challenge getting things set up. I mean, we spent the last 2 weeks making snow, getting ready for this whole thing, and we turn around and, and look what we were blessed with to put on top of it. So it'll be great.
Okay. And so that starts today at 2. Are there other sort of entertainment surrounding it? Are there food trucks or music or anything like that?
We have vendors. We have food trucks. We have Jazz Bear said he wanted to come hang out, try it out. I'm sure he'll cause a lot of fun.
Jazz Bear gonna ski jar? We're going to put Jazz Bear on some skis behind a horse?
Yeah, we're going to see if he can ski instead of play basketball.
Well, that'll be
fun. And then we've got a great thing. We're doing a raffle for Primary Children's Hospital where we're giving away a hot tub from Bullfrog Spas. So, might as well come over and give you a chance to get a hot tub and soak and stay warm instead of being outside where it's cold and full of snow right now.
Excellent. Okay, so for the participants, are there different divisions, different levels of competition in a ski drawing event like this?
Yeah, we go all the way from our novice, which is our beginners who've never done it or tried it once or twice, all the way up to our pro divisions. And we have women-only divisions, snowboarding divisions, and then we even have pony and buckaroos. So we have kids pulling kids, or we have parents pulling their kids.
Okay, so what's the youngest age that someone can participate?
As young as you want. A couple years ago, we had some parents that made a snowboard with some handles and stuff on it, and they put their little one-year-old on there, and they hooked the rope to the snowboard, and they towed him around there at 1 year old. So any age, as soon as you're ready to ride a horse and jump on a skis or a snowboard.
And can people sign up for the people who are novices and just want to try this? Is there a day of potential sign up? Can they just come up today and sign up and try to do this?
We used to let people do that, but it has grown so much that we have more teams than we've ever had before. So it's we've done it and signed up on the website.
Ah, okay.
We've outgrown ourselves on just letting people come and try it out.
Okay, so for people who are listening to this, if you want a ski jar next year, you got to sign up in advance. How many participants are you going to have?
We have 300 teams this year.
Wow.
Yeah, so we've grown pretty good this year.
Okay, and is there prize money for the people of the higher divisions? Is there prize money or
there's prize money for our pro and sport divisions. Yeah, so they win prize money for first, second, and third for the skier and for the rider.
Okay, so a team, you have to bring your own rider, right? You have to sort of supply your own.
Well, if you don't have one, if you don't have a rider or you don't have a skier, we'll help assign that.
And do you have to bring your own horse too?
Yeah, we ask you to bring your own horse. And, so we have a lot of people that have horses and want to try it, but they don't have a skier. So we'll sign them up together and put them together that way.
You'll match them up. This sounds like an incredible event. Okay. Anything else that people need to know about? Is there a charge to come in? Are there varying levels of tickets?
Yeah, tickets are on sale. So they just go to skidrawingutah.com. They can grab tickets right there. You can grab a Saturday ticket, you can grab a Friday ticket, or you can grab a weekend pass. Right now, our weekend pass is if you buy it for Saturday, you get to come hang out for Friday for free.
Excellent. And is there a VIP tent? I know some of these events have things like that.
Yeah, we have VIP tent and stuff, but those have sold out already. So
okay.
We kind of have we're down to our reserve general admission, which gives you the grandstand seating, and then we just have regular grandstand seats that are kind of on that south end in the metal bleachers.
Okay, Brandon, anything else you want to tell our audience about this event before we go?
Come out and have fun. We're just ready to – we're excited and ready. We've got the vendors ready. We've got all the skiers and horses ready to go. So just come on over, have fun, and check it out.
All right, Brandon, thanks for spending time with us.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
We'll be right back after this. Well, Heber Light and Power customers could see higher electricity bills if a rate increase is approved later this month. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports residents can share their thoughts at a hearing this month.
The power company is considering a 13% rate increase, it says, is to catch up with the cost of providing service in the rapidly growing Heber Valley. If the increase is approved, an average household would pay $12 to $15 more each month. Providing electricity is expensive and only becoming more so, according to Heber Light and Power General Manager Jason Nordland. He says operating costs have gone up in part because it's getting pricier for the company to source its power.
A coal facility that's been very affordable for our ratepayers over the years is going offline. And, what it's being replaced with is just it costs us more. So there's those types of challenges as well. Our wholesale power costs are increasing incrementally over the years. And, the smaller rate increases that we've been doing just haven't been keeping up with the overall costs to serve our customers.
Plus, insurance for the company isn't cheap, even though the Heber Valley is relatively sheltered from natural disasters that are a big liability for utility companies elsewhere. Norland says it has to also factor in costs to build out the utility infrastructure for a larger population.
As we grow, we've got to build some very expensive type projects. We're having to build substations. Probably heard about the transmission line that was recently built through the valley. Those transmission projects are well north of $1 million a mile.
He says the company tries to avoid large rate increases with high impact fees for every new customer, but those fees only go so far and can only be used for certain costs like capital projects. And he says the group also has to keep wages competitive to retain its workers. That population growth means Heber Light and Power needs more employees. For example, Norland says it just hired its first systems engineer.
We used to contract that out when we needed help. Now it's to a point where it was just cheaper for us to hire an engineer, bring him in-house.
Expenses aside, Norland says it's a challenge for the utility company to keep pace with the Heber Valley's growth.
We're putting on several hundred new customers a year. I go back to when I started at the utility and, you know, you're lucky to see 50 new customers in a year, if that. So it's really changed a lot.
Last year, the company took on about 600 new electricity customers. A quiet year for the company now is 300 to 400 new users. If the rate increase is approved, it will be up to the company's board, which is made up of elected officials from around the region, to decide when the changes will go into effect. Norland says it would probably be during an off-peak month, like April or October. The board could also approve a rate increase lower than the 13% recommended by consultants. Residents can learn more and share their thoughts at a hearing February 26th. It starts at 6 p.m. in the Heber Light and Power Building. For more information, visit kpcw.org. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
The Park City School District plans to shift away from ranking students based on weighted GPAs. KPCW's Christine Weller has more on the Latin honor system it wants to implement instead.
Historically, students have been given a class rank based on their weighted GPA. Superintendent Lindsay Huntsman said advanced placement, or AP courses, which students can earn college credit for, carry more weight. However, the system doesn't account for other classes providing rigorous coursework.
We offer a lot of concurrent enrollment classes where kids are earning college credit, and they are not weighted.
She said the district wants to move away from this system so students prioritize taking courses that prepare them for college or careers, rather than contribute to their GPA. The current system can also have an impact on mental health, as students are trying to beat their classmates. Huntsman said many high schools are leaving weighted GPA and class ranking behind.
We have seen a national trend of high schools across the nation moving away from class rank and weighted GPA because when college admission reps view applications and transcripts, they unweight the GPA. So they have their own methodology when they're reviewing student applications.
Huntsman said the district will instead shift to a Latin honor system where students can earn three levels of honors: cum laude, magna cum laude, and summa cum laude. The new system, she said, will award honor points to all rigorous coursework. That includes concurrent enrollment and AP courses, biliteracy earned through the dual language immersion program, or completing vocational programs like the Certified Nursing Assistant Certificate. Huntsman said the district originally wanted to implement the system in the 2025 to 2026 school year, but decided to wait.
I received some feedback and information over the course of the last week and made the decision to press pause because it's an opportunity for us to educate our families and our students on the potential impacts and what this entails.
The new system will be implemented in the 2026 to 2027 school year. Huntsman doesn't anticipate any difficulties in the transition. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Not only is today Valentine's Day, but all of February is Heart Awareness Month. Joining us this morning to talk about heart health and some of the things you can do to live your healthiest life is Dr. Armand Lapine of Intermountain Cardiology. Good morning, Dr. Lapine, and thanks for joining us this morning.
No problem. It's a pleasure to be here.
Dr. Lapine, let's start with some background on you. How does your combined training in internal medicine and cardiology influence the way you approach the practice?
Well, I think having a background in internal medicine really gives you sort of the full scope medical problems when it comes to looking at your patients. You know, you're able to sort of look at the whole person and all the various problems that they're dealing with not just be focused on the heart, which is sometimes very easy to do in our profession.
And sometimes when you hammer, all you see are nails. So, exactly. Tell us a little bit about the scope of your practice. What kind of cardiologist are you?
So I'm what would generally be referred to as a non-interventional cardiologist with a specialty in imaging. So the things that I do are see patients in clinic for all sorts of cardiovascular disease, whether it's something as simple as high blood pressure or elevated cholesterol, all the way to very complex valvular heart disease, coronary artery disease, like the type of problems that you hear about when someone gets a stent or has open heart surgery with bypasses, heart rhythm problems, heart failure. So really sort of the full scope of cardiology with an emphasis on the imaging aspect, both nuclear cardiology, which often involves stress testing, and cardiac ultrasound.
So since it is Heart Health Awareness Month, how do you define heart disease and how significant is heart disease as a medical problem in this country?
So heart disease still remains a huge problem in this country. I mean, it's the number one killer for men and women in this country, which often surprises people. You know, people often are under the impression that maybe it's cancer or something else, but it's actually cardiovascular disease is the number one killer for men and women in this country.
Is there a significant difference in the incidence of heart disease or the manifestation of heart disease between men and women?
Absolutely. So, you know, men in general tend to develop heart disease about 7 to 10 years earlier than women do. Following menopause, women start to catch up to men and at some point probably even surpass men in terms of the incidence of cardiovascular disease. Also, the other component of that is that women don't always present in the same manner that men do. And what I mean by that is when you think of sort of the classic patient who's having a heart attack and having chest pain related to a blockage in one of their heart arteries, men often get sort of what you see on TV and in the movies, kind of that classic discomfort in the center of their chest where they're putting their fist up, saying they're having pain. It may radiate into their shoulders or arms or up into their neck or jaw. And it's not to say that women can't have those same exact typical symptoms, but they tend to have more atypical symptoms at a higher rate. And those symptoms can be things that can often be confusing for other medical problems or for things that might not even be recognized as medical problems. Things like being nauseated, fatigued, breakout in a sweat, just sort of general malaise, which can mimic a lot of different medical problems. And so as a result, women can often be underdiagnosed or even undiagnosed with their cardiovascular disease.
Well, we know that it's obviously a serious health problem. Can we talk a little bit about the major risk factors that are associated with heart disease and what can be done to mitigate them?
Sure. So I think, you know, when we think about risk factors for cardiovascular disease, they generally fall into sort of two categories. Those risk factors that are modifiable. So those are things like, do you smoke? Do you have diabetes? What is your weight? What is your blood pressure? Well, it's your cholesterol. Those are all things that either the patients themselves can have a huge impact on or medical therapy can have a significant impact on. Things that are non-modifiable, unfortunately, at this point still are your genetics, you know, your family history, whether you're a male or female, what your age is, you know, so those are things that are less modifiable. In cardiology, we tend to focus a lot on the modifiable risk factors for obvious reasons.
And in terms of sort of focusing on those factors, can you talk a little bit about the significance of diet?
So the way I describe it to my patients is that think of your risk for cardiovascular disease like a big jigsaw puzzle, essentially. And that jigsaw puzzle has all these pieces. And those pieces are various different sizes. And those pieces, some of which are things, as we've already talked about, are things you can control, some of which you can't control. And then probably about half the pieces in that jigsaw puzzle are things we still don't well understand. And so, you know, when we think about diet, it is one of those pieces in the jigsaw puzzle. Now, for certain individuals, it may be a rather large piece. If they're obese, if they're eating lots of processed foods, foods high in saturated fats, that may be a fairly significant piece in that individual's risk for cardiovascular disease. Whereas for other individuals, their bigger risk may be either genetics, or it may be that their blood pressure is very difficult to control, or it may be that they lead a very sedentary lifestyle. So I think those are, you know, the diet is important, and because it is modifiable, it is something we give a lot of importance to. But as I like to tell my patients, to sort of let them off the hook a little bit, you know, they come in after having had a heart attack or been given a diagnosis that oftentimes is somewhat scary for them, you know, and I'll let them know that having a cheeseburger once in a while or having an ice cream, that's probably not going to be the difference whether they live or five or 10 more extra years, but it should be part of just an overall approach of trying to modify and use common sense when it comes to their diet. And because it is something that they have control over, it is an important piece in that puzzle.
I think those words may be somewhat reassurance for those who are going out for extravagant Valentine's Day dinners tonight.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about how treatments for heart disease have evolved in recent years.
So there's several things that when you look at current treatment for cardiovascular disease that have really changed. So I would start sort of on the medical side of things first and sort of look at medications. And as we've all heard and are aware of in the news, we have new drugs like these GLP-1 agonists like Mounjaro and Ozempic that now millions of people are taking for weight loss, and also recently have been shown to be beneficial in non-diabetic patients for cardiovascular risk reduction. So there's new classes of medications such as those that have come to the forefront. There's new cholesterol medications that are out that are referred to as PCSK9 inhibitors. We've had those for several years now for our patients who are intolerant to the traditional cholesterol medicines, what we refer to as the statin drugs like Lipitor, Crestor, those types of medications. We now have some alternative therapies to offer those patients. And then when we look at sort of the interventional or device side of things, things have really exploded in the last decade. And I would say if we had to pick one thing that's really changed, it's been our ability to fix all sorts of heart disease with catheter-based procedures. And what I mean by that is, in the past, if you had a problem with one of your heart valves, you often had to have open heart surgery to fix it. Or if you had a hole in your heart, you had to have open heart surgery to fix it. And now we're able to do some pretty miraculous things with these catheter-based procedures where we can literally make a small hole in one of the blood vessels in your groin or in your wrist and run a catheter up to the heart and expand a brand new heart valve in place of the old heart valve. We can do procedures where we can fix holes in the heart with little clamshell-like devices that expand over the hole in the heart. And so what that means for patients and for the public is that you can have very serious, what often were life-threatening, life-altering cardiovascular disease problems that now can be treated sometimes in a matter of 24 hours with a catheter-based procedure, and you can be back doing your normal activities in a matter of days, with very little, you know, downside to the procedures, very little morbidity, very little mortality, meaning unlikely to have a complication and very likely to live a long life without any further problems.
Echo, by earlier in the interview, we talked a little bit about some of the warning signs that you saw a manifestation of a cardiovascular emergency. Let's briefly go through what should our listeners be looking for in terms of the warning signs for a significant event like a stroke or a heart attack, and what should they do?
Sure. So that's a great question, and it's one I get asked a lot by our patients, particularly patients who've already suffered events, wanting to know what it is that they should be looking for in the future, because having a certain set of symptoms with one problem doesn't always mean you're going to have the same set of symptoms when that problem recurs. So I would say, you know, the main things that we look for are, number one, are you able to do your normal activities without what you would consider any sort of symptoms that limit your ability to do so? What does that mean? It means you're not getting unusually short of breath. You're not getting chest tightness or pressure. You're not getting dizzy or losing consciousness, having passing out episodes. Those would be some of the more common and also more concerning symptoms that if you're developing any of those, both with physical activity or at rest, you should be seeking further medical attention, whether that's through your primary care provider or the emergency room.
Okay, before we go, Dr. Lapan, we started out the interview by you explaining that you were sort of a non-interventional cardiologist. Can you sort of give us a sense of the range of services that can be accessed through Intermountain in cardiology, starting with the hospital?
Sure. So on the Wasatch back, our cardiovascular services have expanded greatly during the time that I've been here practicing over about the last decade. We have nuclear imaging, which is a form of stress testing to evaluate for blockage in the heart arteries. That's something that we've had, and we are actually later this spring, early this summer, going to have access to a state-of-the-art stress test called cardiac PET scanning, which currently has just been down at Intermountain Medical Center and at some of our larger facilities. So we're actually going to start doing that in the next several months. So that's one thing. We have a full range of cardiac ultrasound. So that's the test where you're putting some jelly on your chest and taking pictures of the heart and the valve function. We had offered that test Monday through Friday, as well as a more advanced form of that test where you actually undergo sedation and we put a scope, much like when you have a scope of your stomach, and do an ultrasound from your esophagus called transesophageal echo. We do all kinds of monitoring for heart rhythm problems are available at Park City and Heber. And we offer clinic services to see cardiovascular patients, both in Park City and in Heber.
And I assume that the system is integrated such that patients can be routed to more interventional services down in Murray or in other Intermountain locations, depending on the need?
100%. I would say that's actually one of the strengths of Intermountain, and particularly of our services on the Wasatch back. And that is that we have a seamless integration with all of the services that are being done at our flagship hospital in Murray. As a matter of fact, just 30 minutes or so before going on this call with you, I was interacting with one of our heart failure transplant physicians about two separate patients from Park City who are going to be seen for two very different yet very unusual cardiac problems. And that relationship and the ability to get people in and get them state-of-the-art care is probably the biggest strength of our services on the Wasatch back.
We've been talking to Dr. Aman Lapine about various heart health issues here on Valentine's Day. Thanks for spending time with us this morning, and happy Valentine's Day.
KPCW News Time is 8:59. In partnership with the Park City Library, those who stay in town for winter break can enjoy free family films and popcorn at the Jim Sani Auditorium next week. KPCW's Leslie Thatcher has more.
Matinee screenings are set for Tuesday, February 18th through Friday, February 21st. Executive Director of Park City Film, Katie Wang, says they're offering some family classics.
We're starting off with one of the classics, one of my favorites. That's When I Was a Kid, Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Then we have The Wild Robot, which also is critically acclaimed, came out this fall. Thursday night is Paddington, the original. The sequel is coming out here shortly. And then Friday, the original Beetlejuice. So all at 4 o'clock, all free admission, free popcorn, bring your friends and family. So we are a little sad to see that change, but hopefully it won't be too drastic.
Coming up this weekend, the film A Complete Unknown, a biopic about the early career of Bob Dylan, which is nominated for 8 Academy Awards, will screen Friday and Saturday at 7 p.m. and Sunday at 6. The film for the weekend of February 21st through the 23rd is Sing Sing, a dramatic interpretation of a man who was wrongly imprisoned and then finds purpose acting in a prison theater group. This film was nominated for 2 Academy Awards. And for Oscar weekend, Park City Film will screen 3 nights of nominated short films February 28th through March 2nd. The annual Oscar party will be held Saturday, March 1st, prior to the 7 p.m. screening of the Oscar documentary short film program. The link for tickets and more information is online at kpcw.org. Leslie Thatcher, KPCW News.
KPCW News time is 9 o'clock. Coming up Monday on Mountain Money, we're going to speak with Mark Satterfield, the author of Gilded Revival, America's Return to an Age of Wealth and Glamour. We'll also have a chat with John Kenworthy of Flanagan's about how he's managed to survive and thrive on Main Street for so long. You're listening to KPCW Park City,